Welcome to the Making Waves at Sea Level podcast with your host, Tom Singer. In each episode, we will explore the interesting stories of business executives, entrepreneurs, and industry leaders who are shaking things up and growing their companies. It is time to make some waves. Now here's your host, Tom Singer.
Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of Making Waves at Sea Level. And today, we're going to talk about innovation. If you're running a business, being innovative is really, really important. And my guest today is somebody who I met at the South by Southwest conference. That's right. We all know that South by Southwest is probably one of the biggest gatherings of people who are focused on innovation. And I met our guest, Adam Brouse, in a bar at a party. And I actually thought he was somebody else. And I kept looking at him and I'm like, no, that's the guy from Think Media. I'm positive that's the guy from Think Media. So I walk up and I go, hey, what do you do? And he said, yeah, I'm a professor at Dominican University of California. And I'm like, you're not the guy who I thought you were. But a whole conversation ensued, and I knew right away that I had to have him here on the podcast to talk about change and innovation and what he does with businesses, technology, companies, and the world of education to help spur this whole world of innovation. But before we get started, I have to thank one of the sponsors of today's episode. So this episode is brought to you by Stanton Chase International, one of the leading global executive search firms serving as trusted advisors to help companies build their senior leadership team. And if your company is looking to add a CEO, a CFO, a CMO, etc., you need to go out to executive search to make sure that you have a great slate of candidates. And when you're looking for an executive search firm, look no farther because Stanton Chase International is who you want to work with. Yeah, I'm a little biased. I work with Stanton Chase, but I can put you in touch with the best person in your industry to help you find the best candidates to make sure your company is going to thrive. All right. So today's guest, as I said, is Adam Brouse. And Adam he's the chair of the Department of Applied Computer Science at Dominican University of California. But on top of that, he is really someone who loves to solve problems, whether it's business, technology, etc. He is an entrepreneur, a problem solver, and a professor. So Adam, welcome to Making Waves at Sea Level.
Tom, thanks so much. I'm excited to chat with you about making businesses better. That's what this is all about. It's great.
Absolutely. So let's talk for a little bit about how does one become a professor who really focuses on innovation. And yet what's interesting is you're under the computer science umbrella. Tell me a little bit about that.
I have a really, they say you can only connect the dots looking backwards, and for me, that's totally the case. I have a bachelor's degree in philosophy. And when I got the degree, all the big philosophy firms weren't hiring. So I had to decide to go do something more practical.
I wonder how many people were like, oh yeah, that was the recession where the philosophy firms were really shut down.
I know, Lehman Brothers, that big philosophy firm was shutting down. And so I decided, if the railroads are coming to town, you should really learn the railroads, and be in our times, the internet is like the railroads of our time. So I thought, choo-choo, let's do this, So I started teaching myself how to code and became an entrepreneur. And I started off in consulting, and then I became a software developer and entrepreneur. And then I went into education and started teaching people how to code. And I sort of excelled and was poached over to be at the director level of a new program. And then that program was spun off and then taken over by Dominican University. So it's kind of been this kind of wild ride where I've ended up being somebody who's the chair of a department of a university, and I don't even have a PhD. It's really quite fun.
Well, that is interesting to be the chair without a PhD, but also I wonder how many people who chair applied computer science departments at universities across the country have a philosophy major as their undergrad.
It's a few, the few, but the proud, Yeah. All right, I love it though. I love working in education, not only because you stay young talking to all the young college, college student folks, but also because you get to live the life of the mind. You get to do things like write books. Like I do every year, I try to write at least one book and publish it. So that's a kind of pleasure. And so I'm happy to be chatting with you today, but especially this Leading Change at Workbook. I think it's very germane to your audience.
Right. So that's what we're going to talk about is you have a book called Leading Change at Work, and it gets into this whole idea of innovation. So let's just start off. What do people get wrong when it comes to innovation? And when I say people, I really mean companies. What are they doing wrong?
You know, there's a lot of models of innovation out there, and unfortunately, they don't work super great. Some are better than others, but they don't work super great. They work some of the time, and people cling to them because they work some of the time. The classic kind of standard way that people do innovation or just change as times change is through what's called strategic planning. You know, everybody probably listening to this knows strategic planning. People, you know, executives go off and they maybe have an offsite. Maybe they go to a ski lodge, or they go to a Best Western's, you know, conference room, and they spend a day or they spend a few days trying to decide, hey, what are we going to do in the next 6 months? What are we going to do in the next 2 years? What are we going to do in the next 10 years? And they try to get a kind of vision plan, and they can use various things, SWOT analyses and various tools to try to kind of figure out. And then they come back and you know, the CEO gives a talk or the VPs give talks in their various departments saying, hey, here's what the plan is going to be. And more or less that gets taken in by everybody. And it's, you know, some people are thinking, hey, that's great. Some people are kind of confused and don't know what's going on. And other people are just like, whatever, I just do whatever I'm told, and kind of apathetic about it. It's just kind of a mixed sort of response. And there's other ways to do it too. I mean, you can also do innovation using, maybe you build an incubator inside your company, and you kind of use like a, take a chapter out of a, like a Y Combinator or like a Techstars kind of incubator, but ideas inside your company. That's pretty cool. That's a pretty innovative way to do innovation. But generally you see the strategic planning, and you know, there's nothing wrong with people trying their best. There's nothing wrong with people, you know, going and doing what they can to make the company as good as possible. Everyone has the best intentions with that. The problem is you don't have all the right ideas in the room to do that. As great as executives are, and I'm at the director level, executive level myself, with the various projects that I'm on, as great as that is, and as much as those people have so much experience and so much to go on, you really need every single brain. You need every single brain to be tapped into, not just the brains of the people at the top. And so that's the challenge. Oh my gosh, my kitty turned on the piano.
That is the first time in over 700 episodes we have had a piano playing cat actually on Making Waves at Sea Level. So now that is the definition of innovation when you're doing an interview, to have your cat walk across the keyboard.
That's true.
So it's interesting because you talked about the models of innovation, and somehow to me that just naturally sounds wrong. Like, how can innovation unto itself have models? I mean, shouldn't innovation be like out of the box?
Yeah. Be creative. Maybe expect the unexpected. Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, you have to, I mean, I wish you could just kind of stir the pot and kind of let things flow. But unfortunately, you know, companies are built to execute on a certain business plan, right? They're built to do a certain thing. You know, Amazon is built to deliver packages to your front door, at least one of Amazon's business model, you know, business units. You know, if you're a UPS store, you're built to like get those packages out the door. So you do have to execute on that business model, but at the same time, consumer tastes, technology, are always changing around you. And so you have to be changing as well. And that's really the challenge of innovation, is to do your business model, to execute on your mission, but at the same time, have the structure to change to accommodate whatever changes there are, whether it's a change to that mission or changes just in technology, changes in consumer preference. And that's really what we're up against. And so so there's been lots of these models developed over how to do innovation. And I propose one that I kind of came up with independently. And then through my research, I discovered was actually a classic form of innovation developed in Japan by Toyota. And it's actually part of the lean methodology, or what's called the just-in-time manufacturing, or the lean methodology, or what's sometimes called the Toyota Way. There's a fantastic book called The Toyota Way that I highly recommend everyone check out. And this form of innovation management is called Nimowashi. Nimowashi, which is Japanese for preparing the roots It's actually a gardening term. But what I translate it as is what's called piecemeal consensus. Piecemeal consensus. So that's I call it piecemeal consensus to contrast it with general consensus, which feels more like you kind of get everybody in a room, try to hold hands, kind of sing kumbaya. That turns out to not work very well because people all have different ideas. Everybody kind of maybe disagrees a little bit, and then that all adds up in a big room to a kind of cacophonous sort of, you know, debate. So piecemeal consensus keeps things more manageable. You have a lot of small one-on-one conversations, and by having that one-on-one conversations, you build this consensus conversation by conversation, and it leads to this kind of tidal wave of support and buy-in to make whatever change it is that you want to make. And that could be moving the coffee pot, you know, or it could be developing an entirely new product or pivoting a whole company. Either way, you got to build consensus around doing it, and you got to tap into everybody's brain and get everybody's ideas into the consensus.
So some companies are really good at this. I mean, you look at companies that have very diverse product offerings. You look at companies that have continued to grow when part of their industry has you know, died out. You know, we often think of Apple Computer when we think of companies that have been really innovative in the products and services that they've offered. And then there's other companies who have been somewhat successful, but they just suck at innovating. And I think eventually the wind comes out of their sails. Why do you think some companies are just naturally good at this whole, you know, break down the walls and innovate, and other companies are much like, we don't do it that way here?
That's a good question. Yeah. What kind of separates them from one from the other? One company that I feature in the book, and it's kind of the last chapter of the book, is actually Amazon, who really does have this kind of DNA of innovation. And I actually start the book with talking about Apple. And honestly, I think these companies actually don't know why they're able to be so successful. But maybe it's just me being, you know, when the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. But I make the argument in the book that there are these different models of innovation, and I really break down why they don't work at the end of the day. At the end of the day, if you build an internal incubator, you'll often build very strong new products or changes, but then they can't get out of the incubator because you haven't built strong networks in the actual company or in the actual business units where those changes need to occur. And so you get a lot of these very strong, but then ultimately isolated new products or new ideas. Same thing with the strategic plan. I mean, we've all seen strategic plans come out and then they don't get implemented and they kind of flop, or they kind of drift away from what their original vision was because they never had strong enough buy-in. When you do find companies that are consistently and persistently innovative, they're actually either intentionally, but usually accidentally, doing Nimawashi. So I talk about Pixar, Apple, and Amazon as three companies that are consistently and persistently innovative, who, without anyone, I haven't found anyone at those companies. I've interviewed probably half a dozen people at each of those companies, at least, and no one there has ever said, oh yeah, we know Nimawashi, we do Nimawashi intentionally. And yet, that's actually the through line between all these companies, is that they all do piecemeal consensus and do bottom-up innovation, where they're querying ideas from everyone and bringing those ideas up through the company.
So all the companies you mentioned and other ones that come to mind for myself and probably people who are listening, a lot of them also have very dynamic leaders. I mean, we think of Amazon, you know, we think of Bezos, we think of Apple, you know, you've got Steve Jobs. Do you think that having a leader who is just naturally an innovator percolates down? Does it come from the top down, or does it come from the bottom up?
You know, you have to have dynamic leadership. Like I talk in the book I present, what if we just had companies where we had no leaders, right? Holocracies. So like democratic companies where you just, everybody kind of floats around and does whatever they want and kind of votes on whatever they want to do. And you vote on bonuses, you vote on what salary everybody gets. And there are companies that do this. There's a game company called Valve that does this, and there's Zappos, famously Tony Hsieh's company, that does this holocracy. And I talk about how that's a functioning model in cases where disruptive, chaotic creativity is important. So for Zappos, it actually doesn't really do anything. Like the data's in. Zappos isn't necessarily any better run because it's a holocracy. It's kind of Tony Hsieh was just kind of an ideological guy around this, and he did it. But Valve, on the other hand, is an extraordinarily prolific game development studio. And the reason why they're so prolific is because in games, you need chaotic creativity. You don't just want to like deliver the next game and have it be like the past game. You want it to be like totally different. And so when you want that chaotic creativity, actually the leadership is less important for creativity and innovation, but very few companies really benefit from chaotic creativity. Most companies have a kind of bill that they have to pay. They have to do whatever that business is. If they're a restaurant or they're a tech company, they have to, Uber has to make the car stop in front of you and you get in. Like, they have to do that. It can't just be like, make up a new video game that's totally different from all the other video games you've ever made. So in the companies where you need innovation, but you don't benefit from having chaotic creativity, then that's where something like Nimawashi can help the leaders constantly be delivering on that innovation. So I think a good example that is out there in the real world is Amazon, and how they do what is essentially a Nimawashi analog, where they have these 6-page reports. Have you heard of this before?
No, I have not.
This is a classic thing at Amazon. So Jeff Bezos, early on, this speaks to his leadership, which I think we should really admire. He said, these presentations, I don't like these presentations. No more presentations. So he said, no more PowerPoints. And then he said, when we sit down at a meeting, I don't understand what people are talking about. I want everyone, when we start a meeting, we all read the same 6-page report. And the 6-page report is a review written down of what's going on. Okay, these 6-page reports. So meetings begin with people sitting down and reading. That's actually a very common thing at Amazon. Okay, and these 6-page reports, as the company grew, became actually a kind of line of communication up from the bottom of the company up to the very top of the company. So anyone who has an idea in Amazon, whether you're at the very bottom or the very top of the company, the first thing you do is you write a 6-page report about it. And you pass that on to your manager, and your manager then gets a few 6-page reports from all of their reports, their people underneath them. And they read those and summarize them into 1 6-page report and send that up the chain. And every year, the very top executives, they're not sitting around doing strategic planning saying, hey, what should we do? Well, I have this idea or you have that idea. Let's do that. They're looking at a table full of 6-page reports, and they're reading them like literature, like a big book of 6-page reports. And they're able to almost more like investors pick and choose, like Shark Tank, which ideas they want to throw money at, which ideas, need more work, and which ideas. So they're actually pulling up all the genius of the company up into that executive room and then investing in the various ideas, instead of saying, well, we're going to generate the ideas at the top and kind of execute them down from the bottom up. So I would say it's a dynamic relationship where you want ideas to flow up to the top, and then you want execution to flow down from the top.
Ooh, I like that a lot. All right, I've got more questions for you. But first, I have to thank the other sponsor of this episode. So this episode, like all of them, is brought to you by Podfly Productions. Podfly takes the time and the headache out of creating your own podcast. They set you up with all the equipment, the training, and the guidance to ensure you're going to sound amazing. And then they do all the heavy lifting and that pesky technical work so that you can focus on creating great content, growing your audience, and interviewing people who are making waves like Adam Brouse. Hey, if you want to start a podcast, and I know that many of you do, jump over to podfly.net/coolthings and check out the offer that they have for the listeners of this show. All right, so Adam, what is one thing then that companies could do to just be more innovative? What's a couple of tips that you have?
That's a good question. Yeah. What is there that people could just do turnkey today to take a company where you're at and make it a little more innovative tomorrow, or even a lot more innovative? Some of the things are kind of counterintuitive. One of the things in my research that I found was actually that open office layouts are actually bad for innovation.
I've actually heard that a number of
crazy
times,
right?
That everybody thinks, oh, well, we'll just put everybody in these big things and people can't get stuff done if they don't have a private area to go and actually execute.
Right. So, those big open offices, it actually creates a kind of library sort of feel or airplane where you might be able to sit and code, or you know, sit and write, or sit and do something quietly with your earphones on, but you don't want to talk with anyone because everybody can hear what you're saying. So if you kind of say something that's a little risky, like, hey, what if we did our sales pipeline a little differently, then someone else is going to hear it and be like, no, I like the way the sales pipeline is already, you know, you're kind of afraid to say anything. So you just stay quiet, keep your earphones on and write. So that's one interesting thing, is don't go all in for the open office spaces. Treat the open office spaces as like libraries where people can get a lot of work done on digital work where they're sitting on their computer. But actually you want to make sure you have a lot of ability for people to bump into each other and connect in private really easily. So you want to have like nooks and private offices and little rooms where 2-3 people can meet, because those little kind of 2-3 people conversations, that's actually where this Nemawashi piecemeal consensus can happen. So that's one thing that for sure people can do, is really valorize those abilities for people to have private meetings. I even go so far in the book to suggest that actually just everyone should have a private office. That's what Pixar has. And I think also there was a strong pattern of that in Google, and a strong pattern of that at Apple as well. So I think private offices are fantastic.
I had actually heard that there's a lot of that as people are coming back and bringing people back, and then people will be sort of, they call it hoteling or whatever, where they'll have a spot mm-hmm. they come to, but they have to sign up for it. More people are designing offices that actually have doors, and having more places for people to be able to have that, where they can bring people in, close the door, for the exact reason you said. So it's interesting you said that, because we thought a couple of years ago that it was, oh, this, you know, do away with all the walls in the office. And everything I've heard recently is like, there's a time and a place for that, but you also have to have plenty of places for people to go and talk. Because the truth is, number one, people might steal your idea. Number two, people might undermine you if they don't want change. So you've got to be
absolutely
careful.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Ideas, you know, early in ideas when they're new are a little bit delicate. They're like little seedlings. They have to kind of be exposed to the right people and kind of grow and change. I mean, sometimes your first idea is not very smart, but if you have one of those conversations with somebody else, they can really reorient you. And then those ideas can start to make sense and move forward. But if somebody just says, hey, that's not going to work because they overheard you, then it kind of gets tamped down. One of the things that leads to a really great, and it is really critical for leaders to always, focus on, is balancing the power of management. So, you know, generally, you know, we want to give frontline managers have really difficult jobs. I just have to like totally hand it to them, right? They're the people with probably the hardest job with the fewest resources. I mean, there's harder jobs in the business, but usually those jobs have a lot more resources. The frontline managers, man, they are just given everything. You know, they're given very little resources and just ask the world of them. They have to keep everybody online. They have to keep everybody moving forward. They have to have their whole business unit moving forward. Everybody has to be succeeding. They have to fire people. They have to do all this stuff, you know, and it's really hard. One of the things that they're asked to do is be the gatekeepers of new innovation. And I think this is really not a good strategy. If you force innovation to go up through your management structure, you won't actually see much of that innovation get past your frontline managers. And it's not for lack of good intentions or good training. It's simply because they have a different job. Their job is to execute the actual business model itself. So they're trying to keep people like rolling forward on like quarterly OKRs. They don't want to hear like the totally crazy idea they have, because it kind of takes them away from succeeding in that OKR. So I think asking management to be the gatekeepers of innovation is not good. Don't tell people, hey, if you have a great idea, go talk to management. It's not a really good idea. Instead, say, if you have a really good idea, go talk to your peer. Just go talk to your peer. Go talk to somebody maybe even in another department who's your same level, and just ask them about your idea and share. And actually, that kind of going across the company is a much better way for ideas to kind of socialize and improve before they're ready for prime time, like before they're ready to be actually presented to anyone in management and actually have kind of a yes or a no, or a kind of thumbs up or a thumbs down. So you kind of want the idea to flow laterally around the company. You can also have the ideas kind of flow, I call it up, go over and up. So instead of asking your manager whether this idea would work or you should do this, go find another manager in the company that's just one step above you, but in another department. They're usually fantastic to talk to because they're not just trying to get you to meet your OKRs, right? They're not trying to just keep you in line. They have a lot of more experience and understand kind of more how the management of the company works. So yeah, there's kind of changing the way you think of management. Think of management as execution and think of innovation as flowing through the social networks of the company, not just through the hierarchical structure of the company.
Now, a lot of companies, though, have a lot of companies have walls put into place because you can't talk to your manager's manager, or you can't talk to a manager in another thing, or you sort of get in trouble. So how do we stop fiefdoms from happening where managers don't want you having that type of conversation?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I guess I've never worked in a company where there was really like a lockdown. Like if I was a salesperson, I couldn't talk to like a middle manager in marketing department or in the accounting department. I feel like these days you can send an email to anybody. What you don't want to do is go, and I talk about this in the book a lot. You don't want to go to your manager's manager because then you're going to go like over their head,
right?
And your manager is going to be mad, and they should be mad because you don't want to cut them out of the loop. The idea of going over and up doesn't cut your manager out of the loop. It actually is just getting that expertise and getting that knowledge of, hey, have we ever tried this before in this company? Like, would this be a good idea? What is your experience? You know, what do you think from your experience should we do? That other manager, say if I'm a salesperson, I go talk to somebody in marketing, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, I remember they did that and it didn't work. Or yeah, you know, you could do that. But I go talk to Sam and I go talk to Beverly about that because they're going to know more, right? They're going to be able to kind of be this sort of concierge about who you should talk to next. Whereas your direct manager might say, hey, like, this is great, but like, hey, next month, like on the first, you need to be done with all this. Like, what are you doing spending all this time, you know, trying to revolutionize the way we do whatever, our pipeline or whatever.
Oh yeah. I've worked for those managers. So
yeah, well, it's fine. Those managers, that's my point, is they're doing a good job because that's actually their job, is to keep you in line. That's why you don't really want to make it the person you have to go to when you have a new idea.
All right. We've only got a few minutes left, so I'm going to throw out one more question. What do you wish every business knew about innovation that they just don't know?
Oh, that's a great question. I wish people would know that innovation is more of a legislative process and less of an executive process. Right. So we talk a lot about executives, and on this podcast, I've been listening and learning so much from this podcast. We talk a lot about executives. I'm an executive. I work in executive management. I'm a VP. I'm a CEO. Right. And that's all great. We need executives to execute. But actually, innovation is more of a legislative process. So you can almost think, hey, we need legislators. I'm a legislator. Like, wouldn't that be funny if people walked around a company and said, I'm not an executive, I'm a legislator? Because what do legislators do? They meet in chambers and they're like, what can you do? What can I do? What can your constituents get? Hey, let's hash out a deal. Okay, you got this. Well, let me go talk. Yeah, I gotta whip the votes. I got to go talk to this other guy. We're gonna talk about that. She's going to help us out with this, right? So that's legislating. And actually, innovation is legislative. It's not executive. The executive is about the implementation later, once you have the idea kind of fully planned. But actually, I'd love it if people took more of a legislative approach to innovation. And I think that's what Nimawashi is about.
So this is the first time I've ever heard anybody say, be more like politicians. Normally we want to run from everything that politicians do, but you are actually right. Yeah. And you bring up a kind of a unique point, and that is, you know, if you look at the way legislatures get things done, you have to give a little, you have to take a little, you have to, like you said, whip up the votes, get people on. All right, next time I'm going to support you if you support me this time. And actually, right, that would probably work very well inside companies if people could make those types of deals. So maybe politicians aren't as bad as we think.
Well, a really smart friend of mine said, hey, there's running for president and then there's being president. And, you know, we don't want to necessarily be like running for office, because that includes a lot of sort of false promises and a lot of, you know, but actually once you're in the legislature and you actually have to do the job of governing, you know, that I think is quite admirable. You know, hey, we're going to try to fix this problem. We're going to try to get this law across the finish line. And I think that's the interesting thing about innovation, is that it's more legislative.
I like that.
And no.
All right. So, Adam, if people want to find you, how do they get in touch with you?
They can find me on LinkedIn, Adam Brouse. They can go to adambrouse.com if you want to find my books and other stuff. I'd love for anybody who's listening to this to reach out to me. I collaborate with people on all kinds of things and happy to talk with anybody or work with anybody, whether it's about Nemawashi or any of the other stuff in education or technology that I'm working on. Just would be great.
Awesome. Well, everybody, you can go find him at Adam Brouse. That's BRAUS.com, or you can find him on LinkedIn. Again, Adam Brouse. Thank you so much for being a guest here.
Thanks, Tom.
Hey, take care. Thank you. And thanks to everybody who tuned in and listened. I say it every time. If it wasn't for the audience, why would we do the podcast? We do it for you. Actually, I do it for me because I get to meet really cool people like Adam, but we share it with everybody. And that's the best part. And I'll tell you what, we're coming back every couple days with interviews with people just as cool as Adam. And I know you're thinking, what? How will you ever find anybody this cool again? But we do it every couple of days. So make sure that you tune in and listen to all the episodes. And if you like them, yes, I want you to go leave those fancy reviews on Apple or Stitcher or Spotify. However, more important, tell a friend, because word of mouth is still one of the most powerful ways to market anything, especially podcasts. And when I meet people, they listen to the show, they always heard about it from a friend. So go tell somebody right now. No, I mean right now. I'll wait. No, I'll wait. Awesome. Thank you so much. And we'll see you in a couple days. In the meantime, go out there, flex your business muscles. Make sure that your career ladder is against the correct wall. Go out and be a little innovative. And while you're doing all this, have some fun along the way. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Making Waves at Sea Level podcast. Without your listening to these in-depth conversations, there would be no show. Connect with Tom at tomsinger.com and follow him on Twitter and Instagram at Tom Singer.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.